Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome to ABQ Connect. Hope everybody had a terrific weekend. A little bit of wind in the land of enchantment, but that's normal for us in the spring. Still enjoyed the beautiful weather. Pretty nice and warm out today. Want to remind everybody that, of course, Mother's Day celebrations will look a little different than usual this year. Calvary Church wants to celebrate with you and your family at their Mother's Day drive-in services on Saturday, May 9th at 6:30 p.m. and Sunday, May 10th at 9 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. Come worship with battle drums and hear a message from Pastor Skip live from the Osuna campus parking lot. Tickets are free, but limited to 900 cars per service. Attendees will be required to stay in their vehicles at all times. Register for tickets online at eventbrite.com. That's for Mother Day services on Saturday evening, May 9th, and the morning of May 10th, 9 and 11:30. So go to eventbrite.com. Now that we have that out of the way, we have a special guest today. A frequent contributor to our program, Steve McKee, founder of McKee Wall Work and Company. Steve has written two books, When Growth Stalls, How It Happens, Why You're Stuck, and What to Do About It, and Power Branding, Leveraging the Success of the World's Best Brands. He's quoted a lot of times, according to his website, on all these famous places like New York Times, Advertising Age, but the one that really matters is he's quoted frequently on ABQ Connect. Hi, Steve McKee.
Hey, Jim, and I still haven't changed that on my website.
Hey, I have to bring it up because it just bothers you, and I'm compelled to do things that get under your skin. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
Hey, we've known each other since when? I mean, we've known each other for like 30 plus years, so I know you'll tease
very
me,
long
and
time. I
tease you, and I found out that, you're about to have another grandchild, which I get to add another 6 years to how old you are. So you're like way older than me now.
No, because I remember watching you play college basketball when I was, I don't know, middle school or something.
But I'm not a grandfather yet, so I get to stay the same age, right?
Yep, I guess so.
No, congratulations. You and Denise have
Thank
an
you.
Amazing family, and I love your children. I don't know any of your grandchildren, but all of your children, of course, grew up with my children, and we love them and glad to hear that they're all doing very well. Steve, when we talk about McKee Wall Work, you are an expert at branding, and we've mentioned in prior programs that you've spent a lot of time as a New Mexican. You'd love to have all the McKee children and spouses and everybody living here, but unfortunately, as my kids have done, some of your kids have moved out of town. Now you still have Riley here and Delaney's still here, right?
That's right.
And we've got, you know, to try to figure out a way how to brand New Mexico back in a way that we can attract jobs and attract business people to come to New Mexico. We've got all kinds of crazy things going on in this world. We're all talking about COVID-19, of course. And so let's start by, you know, some topics you sent to me were there's extremism on both sides of the political spectrum. That's probably the understatement of the year. But it seems like this coronavirus thing is following a similar pattern. Absolutely. With what you might call alarmists are on one side, deniers on the other. Is this true? Is it fair? What are the dangers of this partisanship that we continually are facing?
Yeah, that's one of the things I'm seeing and that I'm concerned about because you wouldn't think that in a health pandemic like this, it would be political. And it's not so much that it's overtly political, but people do view it through the lens of their worldview, right? And so, you know, some people see it as the long overdue opportunity for a big, powerful state to step in and help us through. Other people see it as the opposite. And what concerns me about it is it's one thing in our normal politics to have, you know, extremes because you have the great middle that usually moderates everything. In this case, what worries me, I mean, if we're taking the threat not seriously enough, which I don't think is the issue because we have shut down the economy,
right,
then, of course, you know, people could get sick and get hurt, and the problem could be worse than it needs to be. On the other hand, if if alarmism is too strong, and so far all of the models that are out there, you know, have been overshooting the problem here. My concern is that it'll be the Chicken Little syndrome, and that'll be that we'll no longer trust, you know, our institutions, which is a larger problem that we're having. So just say, for example, that things go according to current plan. May 15th, you know, the state begins to open up, and we start loosening things up, and this 6 or 8 week quarantine is behind us, and we're glad it's over. And then in November, there's a new spike, and they say, got to go back home. I'm afraid that a lot of people would say, no, you know, I don't need to do that. And so it's very important that we get this one exactly right. And not that anybody has a corner on what exactly right is, but there's no room in this life and death debate for extremism. There's just not. It's vitally important that we get it right, and that concerns me.
Well, you know, there's an article in the Albuquerque Journal today, in fact, and the headline of it is "The Coronavirus Ventilator Crisis That Simply Wasn't." Rich Lowey, the columnist, wrote this article and said, look, you know, New York, Cuomo was talking all about how the federal government wouldn't give them enough ventilators. They were going to fall short. That same discussion was talked about in New Mexico, and it ends up all of a sudden the next day, oh, we're going to send 400 of these ventilators that we don't need to other states. And so, you know, was that something that somebody was trying to conservatively project this might happen and trying to be well prepared, or was it politicized so that they could make one side, in this case, the Republicans, look like they weren't acting quickly enough? And this whole article is really a discussion about how everything from FEMA to what the government was projecting, and they had literally hundreds of people giving them input. And so it's hard, I guess, history is going to tell us down the road what were the false claims, what were the overboard claims, what were the things that were prudent, where were people not careful. So, Steve, your question is a massive question. I don't know how we can answer it.
Well, and the problem you're highlighting is what they call the win-win paradox, or the win-lose paradox, and that is, if I'm a politician, and I mean, to make these decisions is really hard, right? Very, very difficult. If you overreact, well, you're trying to save people's lives. And so, you know, if we don't need as many ventilators as we thought, if the death projections aren't as high as we thought, you get credit for that because it was your policies that made that happen. If you underreact and more people die, you get blamed. So all of the incentives are for the politicians to overreact.
Right.
And it's just, those are the incentives, and they're understandable. I mean, we would all be subject to those. And so when a crazy model from the University of Washington says that New York's going to need 30,000 ventilators, and Mario Cuomo goes on TV, you know, famously for, you know, needing 30, and they don't need a third that many. What do you do with that? You know, do you say, thank God they didn't need them? Of course you do. But at the same time, do you say, what was that all about? You know, and how many people lost their jobs because of that? It's very difficult. And that's why, you know, we're on the radio station we're talking on, and the context in which we're speaking is one, we believe in truth. We believe there is truth. There is absolute truth. And so the commitment to the truth is the most important thing, rather than, is my side winning or losing? And that's, we don't have enough of that out there.
Well, and I had Congressman Steve Pierce on the program last week on Wednesday. And, of course, the Republican Party nationally and Steve Pierce here in New Mexico, they've been making suggestions to the governor. And the question I posed to Steve Pierce was this. I said, it looks like there's a conversation going on that is public among the Republican side of the aisle. But when you start talking to governors, for example, the governor of Michigan, the governor of New Mexico, about why they have everything locked down, there is no dialogue coming back. There's no feedback. It's generalized in that, oh, because the science says we should. And that's not really true, it appears.
No, and that's what is really getting me frustrated is the lack of transparency and the lack of information. The models are hopelessly wrong. The data is inevitably bad. This is a truism in general. And so the more transparent our leaders can be and the more humble they can be about saying those sorts of things, I think the more good faith that they're given by people. But when you see, I was watching the University of Washington model, Health Metrics and Evaluations, and they have a projection online, and they have a projection for the country as a whole and for every state. Mm-hmm. And about 10 days ago, I was looking at it for New Mexico one night. I think it was a Saturday night, doesn't matter. And I looked at it the next day, and the projections changed by 37% in one day. In one day, 37%. And that's just unbelievable when you think about it, because how is that possible? You know, events on the ground did not change that much. And right. It's because the models are imperfect.
Yeah. Well, and I know that there's no real best practices at this point. I guess there are some. There's some about how you defeat a pandemic, and we will have learned a lot should this ever happen in the world again. I know there may be some prudent steps taken for what people might think is a reinfection or something in the fall of this year. And there's some people being very careful about that. But, for example, I have a guest coming on the program this Friday, and you know him. His name is Buck Buckner. He's a sponsor of KNKT. He owns the Rain Tunnel Car Spas in town. Well, they have kept his business shut down for a month. And Buck says, look, and we're going to have him on the program to talk about this. There is absolutely no reason why it's going to be much safer to go get your car washed. And all of the social distancing and all of the, you know, things that they can do to disinfect your car and to clean it on the outside, and everything can be done in a super safe way. So there's no real reason scientifically or politically to keep that business shut down. And then your friend Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation, he came up with 8 things that should be done immediately. For example, he said, medical facilities ought to be allowed to reopen to elective and outpatient medical procedures. Hospitals are already figuring out all kinds of ways to isolate, you know, COVID patients from the rest of the population. So you're aware of all these ideas and the dialogue going on about it.
Yeah, and there's really obviously we want to be safe. Nobody knows, including us. You and I are just two guys talking on the radio. Mm. However, when you look at it, if you look at the medical facilities, you know, the intent has been to preserve the capacity for an anticipated peak volume. Well, but now they're getting to the point where they're furloughing and laying off employees, and some of the more rural hospital systems are faced with bankruptcy. Mm. That's not going to help anybody. Right. I do not understand why the medical facilities can't be left to their own devices to determine what kind of patients they're going to see, how, you know, what are the parameters around seeing those patients. And even now that we do know enough about COVID to see demand coming with a few day lead. And so there's no reason why you can't do 1 and 2 and 3 day short stay elective surgeries, maintaining 30% of your beds open or whatever the number is. Mm-hmm. I would trust a hospital administrator and the physicians that work there to make those judgments. And so I don't think the one size fits all approach makes sense. But you mentioned something earlier that I'd like to touch on, and that's you invoked the S word, science.
Yes.
Which is, these days, it's almost a get-out-of-jail-free card. Never mind the fact that there's a lot of science that isn't science. I'm a branding guy, right? And I've been really fascinated by the branding aspects of this whole thing. And I don't mean intentionally. I just mean the way we use language and the impact that it has on us. So let me give you a couple of examples. Sheltering in place is actually the wrong term. We're using it. It's being used everywhere. Mm-hmm. You shelter in place to protect yourself from a tidal wave or a hurricane or a tornado. What we're being asked to do, what we're doing, is we are actually quarantining, but sheltering in place makes it sound like there's a different spin on it, right? You shelter in place against something awful out there and you try to protect yourself versus quarantining, which is where you're set apart. And I think that that's just a bad use of language that isn't helpful to the situation. Another one, and this is crazy, I haven't heard anybody talk about this, but we talk about flattening the curve,
mm-hmm.
and I've never liked that term, not because we don't want to flatten the curve, but do you remember they used about 6 years ago, they were in the news, they were talking about bending the curve, and it was when the Affordable Health Care Act was, you know, being debated, and mm-hmm. Obamacare, and they, all the people selling it said, we're going to bend the cost curve, we're going to bend the cost curve, and that's how they sold it. Well, they didn't bend the cost curve. It was a total empty promise. And so every time I hear the term flattening the curve, to me, I just say, it just takes me to a bad place emotionally. I'm like, I don't think that's helpful. And so even bailout, you know, we've talked about the bailout of the PPP program for businesses and the $1,200 for consumers. The term bailout has a negative tint on it because of what happened during the Great Recession, right? The big banks got bailed out.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be uncomfortable with what the government's doing now, but it isn't the same thing as it did before. So labeling a bailout is kind of a lazy use of language that will take people to certain emotional places. And I just think that when you, you know, when you invoke terms like data, which just intimidates people, mm-hmm. or science, we mustn't be intimidated by those things, because I'll tell you, there's no such thing as perfect data. There's no such thing as an accurate model. Mm-hmm. And there's no such thing as, I don't want to say there's no such thing as settled science. Certainly as it relates to this, nothing is settled.
Right.
And you've got scientists, you know, arguing back and forth. So we just need to take responsibility for our own interpretation of events and be wise and be discerning and not give in to clever turns of phrase.
Steve, I'm told by Congressman Steve Pierce that there's discussions between the legislature and Governor Grissom, that even the minority leadership, of course, the Republican Party is somehow involved in that. But none of that is actually happening in the public. You know, I have five children. They have significant others, spouses and girlfriends and so forth, and we're all on a Zoom call. And we're all talking. Is it possible for them to have, without gathering and making people uncomfortable because of the COVID-19, is it possible to have a public forum online that people can at least watch? I know that everybody wouldn't be able to participate because it'd be crazy, but, you know, is there a way for there to be some accountability and for us to see what the discussions are and why they're making some of these decisions?
Of course there is. This harkens back to conversations you and I have had before about, you know, the way that the legislative chambers are built so that people can watch.
Mm.
They are saying, you know, obviously the governor is not wanting to convene the legislature because of social distancing. There's some debate about that, but give her the benefit of the doubt on that. And my understanding is that the legislature can't vote on anything long distance. They actually have to be there in person. But that doesn't preclude them from working on it, you know, and figuring it out ahead of time. And there's no reason why there can't be transparency. I mean, both the governor and the mayor have their news conferences on Facebook. Mm. There's no reason why they can't do it. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of reasons why they won't do it. And in fairness, everybody's always looking for the political angle, right? The political advantage on this.
Right.
And I think that, you know, would that there would be some times where we wouldn't do that. But it's difficult. With all these moving parts, none of these decisions are easy to make. I do think, however, that telling us that X number of deaths are going to happen and then they don't happen, telling us that X number of ventilators are going to be needed and then they don't, aren't needed, telling us that it's because of our policies that that happened, but not showing us the model or the assumptions that are going into it is kind of disappointing and disrespectful of the average New Mexican and, you know, their ability to process this stuff. I think we, human beings in general, New Mexicans in particular, we can adjust to anything, you know, we will. But why? And I think one of the reasons we're starting to see some social unrest is because people are feeling like they're not being told the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
Well, Steve, how many times have we talked about things about politics? I mean, you've visited with us about every 4 to 5 weeks on this show, and you've talked to us about New Mexico politics. You've been involved because you love New Mexico. You wanted to understand the legislative process. You wanted to understand how people are elected, what their roles are. how government is all put together. You want to brand New Mexico as a place where our children want to stay and they can get jobs and they can be educated. And there's a lot of things that you've wanted to put together, and you've worked hard trying to put that together. But how many times have you and I seen things like some law will be passed by the legislature? Here's one example. I don't have in front of me the House bill that specifically refers to us, but it's an early childhood education bill that probably will end up getting chopped now because of the budget crisis we're going to have in New Mexico because of oil and gas revenues and the COVID issues and lack of gross receipts. But this is a bill that was passed. And so as soon as it was passed, I ended up having an interview with David Pierce, the chairman of the Albuquerque Public School Board. And I asked him about that program, and he said, well, Jim, we're not scheduled to get any of that money. So here's the largest school district in the state. Here's a pile of money that was allocated for early childhood education, but the largest school district in the state probably wasn't not only consulted, but they're not going to get any of the money. And what he was basically telling me is the money's allocated, but there's no plan for spending it. And that seems to be very common in politics.
Yeah, we have some real issues there at the state legislature. I serve on the board of the New Mexico Foundation for Open Government. Mm-hmm. And the whole point of that organization is to open the windows, right? Let the light in and make government as transparent to the public as possible. And especially during this time, it's pretty frightening, because when you can cite a public health order or science to close the doors and draw the shades, yeah, that makes you nervous.
Yeah.
Makes you a little nervous, because all kinds of decisions can be made. You mentioned, though, the cut in the budget. This is something we haven't talked about, but buckle your seatbelt, New Mexicans, because we're going to be $2 billion in deficit by the time the legislature meets in June. Mm-hmm. Not only because of the COVID shutdown, but because of what Russia and Saudi Arabia did to oil prices. The New Mexico oil economy has been decimated, and that's where the bulk of our state revenues come from. So this is a 1-2-3 punch that we're going to get as a state that other states won't experience quite as badly as we do. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to make some serious decisions. Or let me put it this way. Your governor and your legislature are going to be making some very consequential decisions that we need transparency to. Mm.
Steve, I've known you a long time, and I'm not just, putting this out there for people because I'm trying to get anything in return, because I really believe this. You are literally one of the nicest human beings that I know. Now, I'm one of those people that yells at basketball officials, or at least I used to, and I'm not so nice. But you are a person that really cares about what other people think. And at the same time, you're willing to strongly voice an opinion. I know that in the advertising and marketing business, which you've developed this wonderful business with McKee Wallwork, and you've been doing this a long time, you actually have business partners and things that don't agree with you on everything. And so you put your ideas out there, and they put their ideas out there, but you don't dislike each other because you're not agreeing. Why can't our politicians see that?
Well, I think it's sort of a negative feedback loop that the worse politics gets, the more difficult it is for good people to be attracted to it. I mean, there are so many wonderful people that I know and you know, that everybody, all of our listeners know, who would make wonderful legislators and elected officials and governors and mayors, and who wouldn't go near it with a 10-foot pole. Mm. It's really an unfortunate situation. But no, the reason that you cited that I surround myself with people like that, as we set out a goal at McKee Wallwork when we started, that we wanted to be a nationally respected advertising agency. We wanted to be among the best. And in order to do that, you need a diversity of ideas. You really do, within the organization. And so we have people from all stripes working for us, all political stripes, religious stripes, and everything else, because our highest priority is to be excellent. And in order for that to work, you have to foster a working environment that is very respectful of one another. And we work very, very hard at doing that. And we have an internal sort of a mantra It's a very simple. It says it's about the idea. Mm-hmm. So it's not about your rank. It's not about your title. It's not about your department. It's not about, and it's about the idea, and you need to speak up, and we beat up the idea until we get it into the best shape possible. Would that we had more of that kind of thinking in government instead of, you know, people retreating to their tribes and their teams. But it's the nature of the beast. It's always been that way. I don't know if we're going to change it. We just need more good people to run, and we need more good people to pay attention and to vote.
Yes.
This really will be the special session in November. I'm sorry, in June, followed by the election in November, is going to determine the future of New Mexico for a generation, without question. We are at a fundamental crossroads. It's easy to say that, but the oil industry may or may not come back in New Mexico in the short term. And if we lose 40% of our tax revenues, that's pretty fundamental.
Mm. Well, Steve, we've got a lot to talk about. What I want to do, I got to take a quick break, say thank you to our sponsors, but I want to continue this thought with you. So stay with us on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
God is love. God's love is intrinsic. It is as essential to God as light is to the sun, as blue is to the sky, as wet is to water. You don't make water wet, it is wet. In all of these cases, the attribute is intrinsic to the object. Take great joy in your God. He loves you. Hey, this is Pastor Scott Thom of Cross Christian Fellowship. Connect with us at crossfellowship.org.
Since 1982, Old Mill Farm and Ranch Supply has provided Valencia County with a multitude of services for animals and their owners. Along with organic feed and seed, Old Mill has Western ware, propane tanks, and more. Assorted breeds of baby chicks are arriving in March. We have the supplies you need to raise them right. Family owned and operated, Old Mill Farm and Ranch Supply's friendly staff are ready to assist. On Highway 314 in Los Chavez and the Riverside location in Rio Communities, you can visit them online at Old Mill Farm and Ranch. Call in orders and curbside pickup available at both locations.
Hi, I'm Ben Lucero, president owner of Indigo Mortgage. In the society we're in today, COVID-19 is on the top of all of our minds, and rightly so. But we can also look at the bright side of life, like God still loves us and he loves our families, along with giving us an opportunity like no other to spend time together without the busyness of life. At Indigo Mortgage, we believe in helping families, and we're blessed to be considered an essential business by the government. So we are able to continue helping clients and their families, either by refinancing to a better rate or by helping fulfill their new home purchase. Although we cannot meet face-to-face, we have a full staff available by phone, email, or you can complete an application on our website. Indigo Mortgage is honored to be part of this community, and we're here to help. Contact Indigo Mortgage today, 836-5700. That's 836-5700, or on the net at indigomortgage.net. NMLS 23-1962 and 188-348, and may God bless you.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Steve McKee, McKee Wallwork and Company, on the phone with us this afternoon. Steve, you're very gracious to spend this time with us on the phone. I just want to check one thing with you. You are coming in loud and clear to us. I think our audience is hearing you loud and clear. Are we feeding back to you when I speak to you?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah.
Well, sorry about that. You got to hear me twice then every time I say something. But you're nice to put up with that, and we'll keep trying to work on that. This is a little more difficult than having you in studio because we don't get to see each other face-to-face and, you know, nonverbal cues and all of that. So I apologize for the awkwardness of being, you know, on a phone interview, but I really appreciate your time, and it's really good. Steve, go ahead and, you know, continue with your thought, that you had before the break. I'm just surprised that, like you said, the openness of in government does not seem to be taking place. There's really no transparency. The conversations seem to be cloaked, and I don't know why that is.
Well, you know, it's crazy because there are, we're having daily, if not near daily, press conferences from state government. The mayor has had several. I guess I would call them Facebook conferences, press conferences. And so there's some transparency in that regard because people are hungry for news. But they have this firewall up between the decisions they're making and the models and how the models are calculated and the assumptions that are going into the models. And what's so frustrating is we've seen in all the national models where they do reveal their methodologies, there's a lot to disagree with. And there's, you know, there's 100 different ways to model this stuff. The thing that gets me the most frustrated is nobody is modeling the economic effects. But we know 75,000 New Mexicans filed for unemployment. Thousands and thousands more have been trying to file. So we don't technically know how many New Mexicans have lost their job, probably over 100,000, because many have been trying to file and unable to. With that level of unemployment, social science demonstrates that there's an increased risk of alcohol abuse and drug abuse, domestic violence, suicide, all kinds of maladies. And we talked earlier about the healthcare system being shut down. People aren't getting their cancer screenings. People who might have a mild heart attack or going to the ER. I mean, we don't know, but these are all things that can happen. There are deaths that are going to be caused by the lockdown. Deaths will be averted by the lockdown, but deaths will be caused by the lockdown, and nobody is modeling that. Mm. Nobody. I don't know why we're only modeling the effects of the virus and neglect, because what's happening now is the unseen victims, if I could put it that way, out there in our small business owners and the people who are, they're starting to get very restless and they're starting to rebel. And we're seeing protests. And I don't know what's happening in Grants today, but you know, the mayor of Grants said he was going to open.
Yes.
Sort of defying the state police there. We don't need that. We don't need civil disobedience growing into uncivil disobedience. And I think the reason is because when people feel like they're not being told the truth or the whole truth, or their leaders aren't considering all the issues, it creates suspicion. And when you add to that suspicion the kindling of, I lost my job, I can't pay my rent, my kid is sick, you know, whatever factors you want to play into it, you have a mess on your hands. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so absolutely critical for our government to be as open and transparent and comprehensive about this thing as possible.
And it really seems like there ought to be somewhere where you can look at the data and the so-called science that everybody's looking at. I know there's got to be 500 sources of that, and they're all seeking it out. I mean, I look at the CDC's website, and it's always, frankly, been kind of confusing to me because it doesn't seem like it's consistent. Like you said, one day they're reporting one thing, and the next day they're showing a rapid decline. So
there was an example just the other day of because of the way the numbers come in, it was a headline in a newspaper that and I don't recall where this was, somewhere in the world, 200 additional deaths yesterday. Mm. Well, it wasn't that there were 200 additional deaths yesterday. It was that the number came in yesterday for the additional deaths from the previous whatever period. And so the problem with this is we're looking to Twitter for our science, right? We all are.
Yeah.
And so you get good science on there, you get wacko science on there. I got an attachment to an email the other day from a semi-crazy person, and I was reading it, and it sounded very reasonable and reasoned, but I was like, I have no idea who wrote this, you know? Could be some guy in his basement just making it up. And so we tend to, when that happens, we tend to revert to our prior, you know, it's confirmation bias. We revert to our prior perceptions. And if I'm suspicious of the government, I reinforce that in my mind. If I believe in the government, I reinforce that in my mind. And here we are. I have a principle that I think everybody should write on their forearm or something. And that is that government should only do what only government can do. Mm. Government should only do what only government can do, because government's not very good. It's a blunt instrument. You know, the government has been sending out $1,200 checks. A lot of people need that money. A lot of people don't.
Mm-hmm.
The government instituted the payroll protection program, you know, for small businesses. I think something on the order of half of small businesses in America are going to get that money, and half aren't. There's something really wrong with that. It's because they're trying, but it's a blunt instrument, and there are better ways to go about it.
Well, Steve, and you know, I know a lot of bankers because I was involved in banking and real estate lending for many, many years, and I called three or four banks here a couple weeks ago and asked them about the PPP loan. And without one exception, the people that I spoke with in commercial lending with each of these banks told me that we are so inundated But the problem is we don't have the information they are requiring about payroll. So do you just fill out the basic application because that was easily downloadable, or do you also have to submit payroll stubs and maybe your 941 deposits and all the things that you're turning into the state and the federal government and what your withholdings are and all of those things to prove that you need this money? Or do you just say this is what you need and then you have to provide the documentation after the fact? And none of that documentation was specified in what came down. What that tells me is, and again, I don't purposely want to offend anyone, Steve. I don't want Michelle Lujan Grisham to be offended by my saying, hey, there's another answer. Let's get some businesses open. Let's do it in a smart way. I don't want her to be offended by that. I'm not attacking her. I'm just saying open your mind. I'm equally not trying to attack, you know, our incumbent administration or Congress or our senators. I'm trying to say, look, guys, if you're going to allocate money, you got to tell us how to spend it. And the easiest way to do that would have been to get some bankers involved so they could tell you how to document these loan applications. And that could have all been part of the instructions. I went and looked at those forms, Steve. There were no instructions.
Yeah. Well, and that's why, you know, back to the healthcare example, I think devolving, there's a famous old principle that government closest to the people is the best government. And that's not just formal elected government. I think the best people to decide what's best for the people of Tucumcari are the people who run the hospital in Tucumcari because they understand the local conditions.
Mm-hmm.
If you devolve that power, the federal government could have done block grants to the states, which is one step closer to the people. You know, there's a lot of different ways of doing it. Now, it is the fog of war. We need to give everybody some slack because – I think everybody is well-intentioned here, and we're all trying to help. But when there's a dearth of information, you're in the fog of war, and you're not humble, frankly, mm-hmm. People are going to start to bend back against that.
You know,
what we're seeing. I'm really concerned that we're not going to make it till May 15th and the governor's date.
Well, I believe that there's a lot of people, not just the mayor of Grants, but there's a lot of people I know now in Albuquerque, business people that are ready to get open, and they're just going to do it. That is really what it's come down to. You know, for example, you talk about New Mexico State Parks, and you mention mental illness and things that being locked in your house can really cause. We've got 35 state parks in the state of New Mexico. Most of these outdoor activities involve social distancing way beyond 6 feet. And it would be, in my opinion, healthy to get those state parks open and maybe set up some rules and some limitations. I think people will be thoughtful and careful, but it'd be great for them to get outdoors. How many people do you know? Like I've got some friends like Tony Hidalgo, who's at Arroyo del Oso Golf Course. Tony is a professional golfer, former great basketball player at Manzano High School, one of the top golfers ever in our state. He runs Arroyo del Oso. Well, right now you can't go play golf. Well, not only are you supposed to be 6 feet apart in golf, maybe you can't ride a golf cart with another person, but you can find ways to spread out. People need to get out there and be able to play golf. And Tony needs people to be able to come in his pro shop and buy things. And I hope Tony doesn't mind me saying this, but this is just things that people do for their mental health. Our nurseries ought to be open. You know, people love to plant plants, and most of that can be done very simply. I mean, there's just a lot of ways that I think the administration needs to think about safely people can be involved in these activities. It'll help them mentally. It'll help our economy. Let me ask you, Steve, I'm voicing all of my opinions here, and I shouldn't really be doing that. I got to ask you because you're the expert. But we live in a state of New Mexico where we have two national laboratories. Both of those national laboratories have been involved in not only this pandemic and finding answers to the biology and things that go involved, but it seems to me that we have some particular resources in this state where we don't even need to pay attention to the so-called science from outside of our state. We ought to be talking to our experts here. What should New Mexico do now?
Well, my understanding is that the scientists at Los Alamos are involved in the governor's modeling, which is comforting to know. I would like to see that. But also, knowing people at Sandia National Laboratories, I know that there's not a universal one way of looking at it. There's a fair amount of division within. So I think it's important for the governor to recognize the facts on the ground, not just the spread of the virus, but the spread of the antivirus, if I can put it that way, the antivirus sentiment, the opening sentiment, and she needs to take into account all of those factors, even if they're unpleasant, and even if she disagrees with them, you know, recognizing that we're going to have, if the goal is even to keep the spread of the virus, well, then you can't have businesses opening rogue. And if businesses are going to open rogue, you don't have enough state police, and you don't want to go there anyway to do that. So you have to account for it. You know, there has to be a loosening up of that. But beyond that, I think the back half of the year is going to be really tough for our state. And we need to, the good news, and there is good news, historically, you know, actually some wonderful things have come out of plagues and pandemics. And I think there's some good stuff that's going to come out of this. I think a lot of us are learning about the value of family and slowing down and, you know, looking each other in the eye again and going for walks and those sorts of things. But New Mexico has an opportunity here to reset. And this is potentially very exciting. Because there's nothing like a crisis, right, to make you examine your priors. And so if we can't just keep going along, depending upon the oil revenue, to keep increasing, you know, the size of government, we're going to have to come up with a completely different plan. And that's pretty exciting. I don't know if you know Dale Decker. He's a very well-known person in the community. Mm-hmm. He wrote an op-ed 10 days ago about, you know, kicking off the 21st century business plan for New Mexico. And his point is, we're going to be decoupling from China, the United States is, right? We need to get our pharmaceutical manufacturing back, and we can't depend on them for mission-critical infrastructure stuff. He says, why doesn't New Mexico step up and raise its hand by providing the right kind of incentives and training and tax system and so to attract all that business here? It's a visionary idea.
Yes.
It's a magnificent idea where you can turn, you know, a crisis into a wonderful opportunity. That's the kind of stuff we need to be paying attention to. And if we do, we could look back on this time as tragic, but also a real point of departure. Or, you know, the governor was in the New York Times last week, and the headline was how New Mexico, one of the poorest states, averted a steep death toll. Mm. And the paper was rightly crediting how few cases we've had, you know, relative to other states. But do you notice the headline? New Mexico, one of the poorest states.
Yes.
So 2 million readers of the New York Times saw that headline, and it just reinforced the negative perceptions we have. That's what we need to fix. That's what we need to fix.
Well, and Steve, there's a lot of people at home binge watching Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, seeing these shows over and over, all concentrated in the last 3 to 4 weeks. The brand of New Mexico, we still are at the bottom of every good list and at the top of every bad list. Talking last week about feeding New Mexico kids, we are last in childhood hunger in the United States. It's difficult for me to understand why that is true, but one of the ideas that I have as you're talking is we have 112 state representatives about to be reelected in our state. So I'm going to ask you how Christians can be involved in participating to make sure we have the best leadership in office as we move forward.
Yeah, I I'm a broken record on this, but first of all, we all need to vote. You need to vote. And it's easier than ever now because with all the concern about social distancing, the expectation nationally is that absentee ballots will go up significantly. You can order an absentee ballot in all of 30 seconds on the website. They'll send it to your house. You vote, you send it back. So we need to commit to voting for sure. Mm-hmm. But then that begs the question, to whom do we vote for? For whom do we vote? And it's a pretty simple proposition, I think. It's a matter of who represents your values and who has a plausible plan for turning New Mexico around. And that's going to be different in every district. You're going to have to do a little bit of homework and talk to your legislative candidates. But I think the opportunity to erase the board here is one of the silver linings of the COVID crisis is that it sort of alerts us all to say, well, wait a minute, why are we one of the poorest states? How are we going to protect ourselves in the future? What is going to become of me and my business and my children without oil revenues? And who can I vote for that is going to turn that around? Mm. So there's no getting away from civic responsibility. And I think as believers, we ignore or neglect that to our shame. We have been given, the Bible talks about respecting the governing authorities. In America, uniquely in history, we are the governing authority. We're a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And so to respect the governing authorities is to respect your own role in government, which means exercise your right to vote. A lot of people died for that and died to protect it. So if Christians voted, we could, in the numbers, that other groups vote, we could change the state instantly. Yeah. And I just think we need to do that.
Steve, when we come back from this break, I want to ask you about the brand of New Mexico. We've mentioned it, but I want to ask you specifically about how the world sees New Mexico. We'll be right back with Steve McKee right after these messages.
I'm Rob Sneed, General Manager at Power Ford. Have you ever wondered why people dread buying a new car? Maybe it's because of the way they were treated in the past. Maybe they were disrespected, or maybe they were even lied to. Well, none of us can change the past, but at Power Ford, we can help you write the future. We're a different type of dealership, so you have a different type of experience. We believe in doing the right thing, building trust, and leading with our values. Faith, family, and then Ford. We're here to help. Just ask. Find your ride at mypowerford.com.
Gonstead Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury, pain in your back, neck, shoulders, arms, and legs, as well as numbness in your extremities. Dizziness and bladder or bowel issues can all be symptoms. 90% of doctors treating spinal ligament injuries don't know how to determine the severity and location of this condition. At Gonstead Physical Medicine, all of the providers are trained to do this. Schedule a consultation today at gonstead-nm.com. or 505-884-8584.
Here's Mike Fabares, Bible teacher on Focal Point.
You know, when we're in a dark season of personal pain, it is easy to begin questioning God's goodness. Man, I know that. That may be a natural response to our discomfort, but it certainly isn't the right one. Instead, in Psalm 107, we read that those who are hurting should purposefully quote, here it is, give thanks to the Lord for he is good. God's goodness, the psalmist reminds us, can be seen in the ways he's delivered us from previous bouts with trouble and pain. And of course, the greatest example of his goodness is our eternal redemption from sin in Christ. You may be in a dark season, but remember that God is good. Whether your suffering is the result of some unfortunate circumstance or some poor decision of yours, know that God is gracious and he can deliver.
Right thinking leads to right living. Want more? Power up with Pastor Mike Fabares on Focal Point. A half hour of hard-hitting Bible teaching here on your station. Or check it out online at focalpointradio.org.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Steve McKee on the phone with us this afternoon. His two books, very interesting reads. I'd recommend them highly. When Growth Stalls, How It Happens, Why You're Stuck, and What to Do About It. And Power Branding, Leveraging the Success of the World's Best Brands. Steve, what's the next book?
You know, I'm not sure. I have several ideas. And that's the way it works. They have to percolate before one rises to the surface.
How about the?
I thought I was going to have lots of time during the quarantine to write, but I'm busier than ever with work. I'm delighted to say.
Yeah, well, you've probably had to adjust to your advertisers putting out a message of both encouragement, which, by the way, that is a silver lining. Everything I'm seeing in the from advertisers now is really positive. Just trying to lift people up. Almost less concerned about attracting business than just encouraging people. That's been kind of a neat thing to see.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I want to ask you now about New Mexico. What is your perception? I mean, I know you've been here, so I don't know if you can remove yourself from how you see New Mexico, but how is New Mexico perceived outside of New Mexico?
Sure, and I can say, because we've done a lot of research in that arena. So, sort of two different ways. From a from a visitor standpoint, a tourism or leisure standpoint, New Mexico is perceived very, very well. It's exotic. It's a wonderful place to go to. Santa Fe is, you know, one of the most appealing destinations. All over the state, we've got wonderful attractions. And from a visitor standpoint, we lack awareness because we're not, you know, we're not as big and as well known as other places. But generally speaking, it's perceived very well because of the natural advantages we have here. From a commerce standpoint, it's sort of twofold. One is we very much lack awareness. We're just not really on people's radar screens. We're not top of mind, if you will. Mm-hmm. But when we do come into people's mind, it's that headline from the New York Times. We're seen as 49th and everything. You know, it struck me as during the break when you said we were going to talk about this, I was reflecting on I'm working on a new piece for my Smart Brief column that talks about how there are silver linings to events like this. In this case, since this virus is affecting the entire world, we're all preoccupied with it at the same time, mm-hmm. and that does present some learning opportunities. And it reminded me of a couple of other historical anomalies that you couldn't have asked for, you wouldn't have wanted to ask for, but they happened, and that was the partitioning of Korea in 1945, mm-hmm. which is still with us. And then the partitioning of Germany, I mean, the Berlin Wall went up in 1961, but the Iron Curtain basically was right after World War II, where you had two nations that just cut themselves in half, and the people had on both sides of the border had the same language, the same culture, the same history, the same natural resources. It's sort of this magnificent economic experiment. And the only thing that was different between the two was their government and their economy, you know, capitalism on one side and socialism on the other. Mm-hmm. And history bore out the sweeping superiority of capitalism in all manners of human thriving and what a bankrupt way of looking at the world communism is. Well, what's so fascinating about that is the state border between Arizona and New Mexico is artificial, right? All state borders are. I mean, we put it there, but it's not like there's anything there.
Right.
What divides Arizona and New Mexico is we're two different states, and that happened just over 100 years ago. It wasn't very long ago. In 1930, Arizona and New Mexico had the same population. I don't know if you're aware of that.
No, I had no idea.
Today, Arizona's population is almost three times New Mexico's. And I just saw a statistic today that Arizona is one of the top 20 states in terms of GDP. Mm. And that's our next door neighbor. So very similar border or language, culture, history, natural resource. I mean, both Arizona and New Mexico were part of the original New Mexico territory. Mm-hmm. And so the difference are the decisions we make. And nationally, people see that. And that's why most business rankings, whether it's Forbes or U.S. News and World Report or private organizations that rate states, ranked New Mexico very low. That's why last year we talked about this. We were ranked the worst place to do business. Mm. And that's, you could shake your head and be depressed by that, or you could be really excited and encouraged by that because, you know, when you're 0-16, you got nowhere to go but up.
That's right.
We can start winning if we just start making different decisions, and perhaps this crisis will get us to a place where we're willing and able to do that.
Well, Steve, we don't have a lot of time left. We've got about 5 minutes left, but I'm going to skip down the bottom of my list because I don't want to miss this question. What great things are going on in New Mexico, and how should we communicate these things to the world?
Well, that's, you know, I go back, I always have to start with our natural advantages. This is, and those of us who live here know this, there's no better, we were Zooming with our kids yesterday from the backyard in the sunshine, mm-hmm. you know, perfect day. Mm-hmm. And our kids are in Pennsylvania, two of them, and they were in the rain and the cold and the, right? I mean, this place is just magnificent from the sunset photos that everybody posts on their Instagram every day to the climate, to the natural beauty. If you drive around our state, to the cuisine that we have and the artwork, and those are all magnificent things. And then on top of that, I think there is a certain shared destiny that we all feel together. There's a certain sense of being New Mexican, mm-hmm. As opposed to Texan or Coloradan or Arizonan or Californian, that we're all very proud of. There's a thing here. There's a culture here, and it's hard to describe, but you know it when you live here. It's why so many of us are drawn here. If we can tap that, further tap it, there's nowhere to go for us but up. And that, again, I keep coming back to that optimism, I think, of our destiny is in our hands.
Yes.
All we need to do is make decisions. And it's such a, we're such a small state that we can do it. You know, it'd be very difficult to turn California around.
Mm-hmm.
But New Mexico is a small state, 2 million people. All we have to do is make up our minds and do it. So
yes,
pretty bullish on our future if we can just pull together and make some good decisions.
So, Steve, how does New Mexico start to attract families back into our state?
Yeah, it's all related to the same thing. Families go where families prosper, right? Families go where families are welcome. And so you got to feel safe, first of all. And we all know about the crime problems that we're all trying to address here.
Mm-hmm.
You have to believe that your child is going to be well-educated. And so we have to work on our education system. And you have to go where you believe you have a future. Historically, we've had a little bit of a difficult time recruiting people to our company, only because even if they really want to come to work for us, they look around and they say, well, if it doesn't work out, I'll have to move away. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot of economic opportunity there. And that's true. So one of the cardinal rules of economic development is if you want to attract people to your place, make it a great place for the people who are already there.
Yes.
And that's a good rule of thumb. We can make it a great place for the families here. We will attract more family. And frankly, we will quit losing our families, which is the bigger problem that we have, is they're leaving us right now.
Yes.
And we have to keep them here.
Steve, a couple positives I want to point out, and some people might find these trivial, but had Danny Gonzalez, the new football coach of the University of New Mexico, on the show here 2 weeks ago. I'm very excited that we may get back to playing football, and now we have a coach and an enthusiasm that I really think he's going to turn things around here, and it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be fun for our whole state. And one of the things, you know, I always tease people from New Mexico State, but as soon as the Lobos get better, so do the Aggies, and vice versa. They kind of push each other, and it's kind of fun. I get the root for the Lobos when they play the Aggies, but I always root for the Aggies. They're my second favorite team. Want to see them have great success as well. And then I had a neat show last week with Dr. Brian Nixon. We talked to Brian, who's in charge of education for Calvary Albuquerque, and he's an assistant pastor. But what we talked about was we talked about the arts, and I talked about the art that you can see in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And Brian just started talking about, you know, crazy, unbelievable composers that are from New Mexico and all of these painters and sculptors and, you know, people that are involved not only in ministry, but they're magnificent Christian musicians. And he just went through this plethora of people that I didn't even know lived here. And he talks about, you know, going to the Philharmonic and all of the musicians that are here and the treasure that they are. And I don't think anyone outside of New Mexico knows about any of this.
Yeah. And that's because we don't have the heft to throw it out there. But we'll make it known. And, you know, just to wrap this thought up, branding is the sum and substance of everything that you do in the marketplace. So there is an economic reason to root for the Lobos and Aggies, because that kid got drafted from the Aggie football team for the Detroit Lions, and good for him.
Yes.
The more our teams succeed, the more people will pay attention for the right things. And so I say, go Lobos, and I can't believe I'm saying this. Go Aggies.
Well, hey, I'm all for the Aggies, but, you know, nobody's going to fault me. That's one of the things about politics. Why are we getting angry? We ought to have a little competition. We ought to have a little conversation. My friends that are Aggies, they don't dislike me. They just love to play the game with me. It's a lot of fun. Steve McKee, thanks for spending time with us today on ABQ Connect.
You bet.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.